So this month, and we're bringing this back. It's been a long time since we've done this, and it's a great time because we got a lot of cool shirts right now, is for either one of our big bundles, the RGB or the Super Bundle. With that purchase, you actually get your choice of any two shirts you want for under a dollar.
So boom. Under a dollar for both?
Yeah, and the reason why that's even that is because actually the system doesn't even allow Doug to put it for zero. He had to mark it off for 99%, which I think it makes it like 26 cents, each one. Yeah, so for almost under 50 cents, you're getting two shirts of your choice, and for as long as they last. So that's you guys got to get on there, make sure you guys grab that right away, and then you get, I believe, an email, right, Doug, will get sent over to them, which will give them the code,
the link or whatever to get
those
two shirts.
The link and the code to go over to Big Cartel and then pick whatever shirts that they want. So
the RGB bundle is MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, MAPS Aesthetic put together. It's 9 months of exercise programming, and it's discounted. Discounted pretty big. It's like over 20-something percent off. The Super Bundle includes those plus MAPS Anywhere and MAPS Prime, and then it takes like 30-something percent off. So enroll in either one of those and get two shirts for almost free. You can find those at mindpumpmedia.com.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump with your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
Man, I'm a little hyped and excited for the kettlebell competition this weekend, man. This is going to be...
Oh, my gosh. It's coming.
We got, what, 100, almost 100 competitors?
Yeah. It went
It's going to be a madhouse
in here. It became like one of the biggest ones.
How? What'd you guys think about those trophies?
Those are sick.
Yeah, they're cool.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. They're going to like those a lot.
How'd you get them to make a cast of your penis?
Yeah, that was kind of expensive.
It's functional, too.
A lot of material that we had to use. So.
For the ladies.
No, we did something pretty cool. I'm excited.
It's not that.
Like
that's
a serious
gentleman.
Battle axe, man. So it's looks pretty dope. And I liked it because it was different. You know, in men's physique, we used to get these swords, right? Which I never won. I was really pissed.
Why didn't you want a sword?
You got to win. You got to win.
Conan sword?
Who doesn't want a sword?
No, I wanted a sword.
You were pissed
because I didn't get one. I wanted one. Oh. Absolutely, I fucking wanted one. If you win a sword, you won the whole show overall, which, you know, even if you get first place, you still got to beat the overall, right? So that's like when, you know, Arnold and... You know, Columbo always went against each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Arnold always took him for the overall. But Franco always won like his class and
the short class or whatever.
Yeah, it's like you get a ninja star, I get a fucking sword.
Yeah.
It is tough shit.
It's a total, like, there's no, that's what I'm saying. It's like a badass sword, or you get like nothing, dude. Yeah. You don't get nothing for second,
oh,
dude.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
not even to
get a fucking handshake.
Yeah, a little BB or BB.
And you guys, second place is a set of steak knives.
You guys see our boy Arya, too. He just took second place on his last. He's going to nail,
again?
Three shows within 28 days.
He did?
Yeah.
Dude, he's a madman.
You know what's crazy?
Impressive. How do you keep that up?
I got a question. I was just going to ask you, Adam. Do you think it's easier for him to be able to do that because he's natural? You know, like to kind of stay in shape and stay lean? Do you think maybe he has less weight fluctuations? Or do you think maybe the benefit of just knowing his body better?
Well, yeah, I would say I would give him more credit like that.
For that.
Yeah, because there's probably a lot of guys that run a lot of anabolics that think they know their bodies really, really well. But until you've put yourself in the type of
Here's what I'm thinking. Like, I know guys, a lot of guys who take a lot of gear and they'll take a lot of like fat burning type cycles and gear and stuff pre-contest. But then they have to go off to let their body reacclimate. And I guess if you're natural, you don't have to do that.
Well, if you're someone like Arya who has to do all the natural things, there's probably less of a rebound, right? So if you're somebody who's taking Winstrol and Clin and you're letting a lot of the drugs to help you along the way and you rely on that. So again, and we talk about this on the show a lot, right? Like, you know, not to take anything away from anyone runs it. I mean, shit, I ran Clin for the last 2 weeks of shows and testosterone through my shows. So, you know, I'm not knocking anybody at all for that. But if you've relied on that to get you in shape and you've never been in like, you know, super great shape without it, then there tends to be more of a rebound when you come off of it, right? So you come off, your testosterone levels are now dropping down, you're weaker, so that's a little depressing. You come off the clin, which is like making your metabolism and winstrol through the roof.
And I'm also thinking in terms of like water retention, you're more likely, you know, to hold water when you're on androgens. Maybe the thyroid, if they're doing thyroid, you know, hormones, well, pre-contest, you don't want to necessarily stay on those all the time.
Yeah, well, that's like your cleanse and stuff, which can affect that. But you're, most guys that are using drugs or anabolics, letting in the show, know what types of testosterones they should be peeling back, getting, because you don't want to be holding a bunch of water when you hit stage. So as you get closer to stage, you're tapering down your testosterone already. So you're pulling out synthetics like that, or switching them over to like cypionate and things like that, versus longer things like esters. Like,
yeah, it's just interesting to me because this is anecdote, but observationally speaking, I've known a couple natural competitors who looked phenomenal, and they were able to compete frequently. Like they didn't have these crazy rebounds. So I'm wondering if it's just knowing your body better and the fact that you're just not having to worry so much.
Well, I think it's a good call
to manipulate. You know?
I think it's a good call that I think it's both. You know, I think it's you're required to compete at the level that he's at, right? I mean, he gets on Olympia stage. I mean, it blows me away when we talk about this because I honestly do not, and I know quite a few that claim it, but I don't know anybody else that truly is 100% natural and gets all the way to the Olympia stage for men's physique. That's incredibly impressive. So the level of understanding his body, and you guys could tell when he pulled up his, you know, I had yet to meet somebody who took their tracking to another level I have. Like his, I mean, he's spreadsheeting and like he's crazy,
insane amount of detail.
Yeah, I mean, I tracked the shit out of my all my stuff, but he was on a whole nother level. So, you know, a guy to do that, he just knows his body so well. And he's not obviously not relying on drugs to get him there. So, you know, there's probably less of that. Plus, what you're saying, there's stuff that's going on chemically, you know, inside of your body that you're changing and hormonally, which can, you know, have to do with that. But I think more psychological and really understanding the body for these guys that blow up afterwards, because there's this, you know, and that's part of the reason why I when we started this, I know we don't talk so much about competing anymore. But I talked a lot about it when we first started because I was just blown away by, you know, how many poor relationships with food and exercise existed within this, you know, the professional level of competing. You know, it's this balls to the wall, take whatever it takes to get there. And then when you accomplish that, it's like fucking, wow, whatever, binge.
They'll bring like food with them, like boxes of like, you know, Twix and whatever candies that they've been craving. And they'll take it with them to eat right after, literally right after the show's over. You know what I mean?
Oh, it's super popular now, like for guys, girls, or, you know, depending if you have a girl, like the partner buys them this just huge, you know, grocery list of cookies and brownies and candy and just tons
deep
of
dish pizza.
Tons of that. And you'll see lot of them will shoot it in their Instagram stories and show like all the food, the spread that they're about to crush. And most of those dudes, the crazy part is most of them crush that in that night. You know, it's not like, here's all the food I'm going to be eating for the next month because I missed it. It's like,
well, you're dying. Yeah. And let's be honest.
Who was it that we were talking to that said he gained something like 25, 30 pounds within?
Was it Johnny?
I think it was Johnny.
One of my shows, that was a major eye opener for me. I had a binge after a show and it, I guess that's the part of me that I get it. You know, I understand like it's really tough to stop. Like when you get so shredded, so lean, you've restricted so hard for so long, it's really easy to justify like, I deserve this. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I can afford to go crazy and still look awesome. You know,
well, would you be able to bounce back and then do another show in a couple days or a week?
I have. I've never ran 3 and 28, but I ran a back to back show where there was only a couple weeks in between. There's pros and cons to that. I liked it because I was already in really good shape, and then I'd have like a night off or two of eating and just kind of enjoy myself, you know, go hit the sushi and enjoy some desserts and kind of, you know, pile on a few calories. And then I get right back into contest prep mode. And I'm already in good condition. I'm already in the mental focus. So I like that part of it. But it can get wearing and taxing on the body. You know, it just, you're living in a caloric deficit for that long all the time. Like you're just
being super lean.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Just being super lean all the time.
Yeah. So it's to see him do that naturally and three shows back to back. I mean, it's pretty impressive.
I know he's incorporating more frequency into his workouts, because of, the influence that MAPS aesthetic has had on him. And he's looking pretty incredible, man.
Yeah. No,
his muscles look very, very full going into his contest, which, you know, especially for a natural athlete. That's tough.
In my opinion, when they first created the category, I really believe this is why I wish that, you know, he would win is I really believe that, and this is where the politics get in, it's really unfortunate, is I believe they intended his look to be what represents the league. Like the idea of men's physique was that men's bodybuilding got so out of control with anabolics that the average person looked at that and said, like, I don't want to take a bunch of stuff to look like that, you know? And if you do, that's all to each their own. But a majority of people looked at that and said, that's not obtainable to me. I don't want to take tons of stuff like that. And okay, so in comes men's physique. And men's physique was this, you know, cover of men's health look. Like it's supposed to look obtainable for a natural man. Like a natural guy should be able to, if he's got good genetics and he trains hard, he diets correctly, could obtain this look. And so I really think he is a great example of what that looks like. You know, somebody who has put the years in and the discipline into sculpting and shaping an incredible, balanced, symmetrical physique that is obtainable naturally. But unfortunately, you know, like anything, just like bodybuilding, you know, it's you see the look just progress and it becomes, you know, the freakier and more impressive you look becomes what wins.
There's no sport more evident than that than female bodybuilding, how that went. When female bodybuilding first started, you ever look at pictures of like the female, like Rachel, I think Rachel McLish.
They look like women's bikini now. What women's bikini looks
women's
like.
Women's bikini looks more muscular than the way female
That's what I mean.
Started.
Like the old bodybuilder women look.
They were just very fit, you know, looking. They were natural. And then it started to progress. And then Corey Everson kind of brought it to the next level. And then next thing you know, like these chicks are, I mean, they're on some serious yoked gear, and they look they look crazier than I ever could even dream of looking like with my, you know, male body. It just got insane, and it became a very cultish, you know, kind of sport. Kind of destroyed it. So I think that's what they were afraid of, but they gotta get better with that kind of stuff. You know?
Yeah, you know, and it sucks because the IFBB and NPC are the most well known, and there's natural.
Yeah, there's not really any.
Yeah, there's
exposure there.
There isn't any. And sometimes I think like, okay, well, maybe if because the way IFBB and NPC is growing, it's insane. I mean, I was just blown away when we went to Aria's show. And, you know, that was, I mean, it'd be like you got.
Oh,
like,
it was a packed house.
Yeah.
Like every seat.
That was prejudging.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, for prejudging.
It's crazy. It's crazy to see where it's grown. So I think, okay, well, maybe when it grows so out of control and so big, maybe a lot of people that decide will start to bleed over into natural. Maybe you'll see this new. And we have buddies like our boy Jason Sinatra, who is a stud and all natural bodybuilder. He got on the all natural Olympia stage and competed and looks badass mm-hmm. and a great all natural dude. But you just don't hear about that league. Like nobody really talks about it. And I know, what is it? Is it PNBA and what's another one? There's two.
I have no idea.
Yeah, and they're just not well known. They're not the guys that are all on the cover of the magazines are coming out of, you know, IFBB and so, or WBFF. That's the other one mm-hmm. that's really well known, but neither one of those are tested, so mm-hmm. you can do whatever you want. So it's crazy to see the direction of it. I was very fascinated in the just the business side of it. There's so many businesses that are popping up around it because it's a growing industry.
You know, I wonder how big bodybuilding is, and if you compare it to like a more recent developed sport like CrossFit, which one is generating more
revenue?
Money? Yeah.
Oh, for sure, CrossFit.
You think
Oh, yeah. No, not even close. I mean, once CrossFit hit, once Reebok signed with them, it just took that.
It just goes to show you how cultish bodybuilding is. It's like this cult. It's still that way.
Yeah. What's interesting is CrossFit also, I mean, they definitely absorbed all like different types of like supplements you know, like they're looking for all these extra like accessories and all these different things to go along with it. And you just see, you see how companies just boom, they just come in like flies and absorb that, that cult like, you know, culture. And yeah, it's interesting. It's very similar. Well, they're both very similar.
Hate it or love it, you got to respect what Greg Glassman did. I mean,
of course.
I mean, from a marketing perspective, I mean, the guy was fucking brilliant, dude. I'm sorry,
people fucking love it.
Yeah, it's. Yeah. I mean, taking.
Well, it's fun to watch. That's for sure. It's a spectator friendly, you know, resistance training based sport. I can't think like, well, weightlifting, yeah, not nearly as fun to watch. Powerlifting, boring as hell.
I was gonna say, like, even, yeah, Olympic lifting, like these kinds of things that are very specialized and specific, you know, you don't get a lot of viewership in the Olympics.
No, unless you're a weightlifter. Like if I showed weightlifting to my, you know, my aunt, she's gonna be like, well, okay, who cares? If
well, I show her wrestling, dude. Look at what they took wrestling away from the Olympics because
so,
it wasn't
exciting
enough for people.
So
it's like you got to do WWF for that shit. You know,
so
like,
give them knives or something. Here you go.
Do you think that it goes? Wrestling. Do you think that it eventually gets into the Olympics?
What?
CrossFit.
CrossFit? Oh no,
I believe it does.
You think CrossFit does?
I believe it does. I believe it does. I believe it.
No, they would need to have it like more structured because they change it all the time. You know, like it, you have to be able to train for something specific.
Here, you know, it used to be.
Why?
Well, here's the thing.
Why? Why would you not do it exactly the way they gear?
No. But
why would they?
I think I know what Justin's saying. Is you need some kind of a standard for Olympics.
If they're
going to
go train at like an Olympic facility, like they train very specialized, you know, every day for like they know their run inside and out. They know the weather.
There has to be a particular
the altitude. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
What do
you
mean? They have to.
Why do you think that would keep it at the Olympics?
Because the Olympics, that's the way that they review sports. So if I say, here's CrossFit, and they look at all these events. They're gonna be like, "Well, they don't. They're all different. Like this one has these three different lifts, and this run. Mm-hmm. This one over here has a kettlebell movement, and this and there and that." What they would want is standards.
Yeah, because even the comboed standards. Ones, like let's That's, be honest, the comboed is, ones, like where you do what do you call that? Skiing, and then you shoot, and then it's like a combo of like four or five different things,
but it's standardized. Yeah, that's all.
So this is the debate I have with that is, so what? Just because they've done it like that forever, you don't think that they can?
Yeah, bro, I'm just saying it's going to be an uphill battle for them to change the opinion
So here's the thing.
The council.
Two things. Number one, nobody cares about getting the Olympics anymore. It used to be you start a sport and that's like the goal, like get in the Olympics and that's like... Joe Weider's brother.
Yeah, that was like
dream was to put bodybuilding in the Olympics. Today, like CrossFit,
that's too subjective, though.
Would CrossFit make more money in the Olympics? Well, first of all, to get in the Olympics, they'd have to prove that CrossFit is being competed worldwide,
which it's then on its way.
Then they would have to prove that there's a standard that of competition, and they would have to show the standard. They'd have to show a long lineage. Would it even be worth the time and the trouble? I don't know. I don't even think they care.
Yeah,
you know, that's just the way it is nowadays. Like people don't really care anymore about getting certain events in the. Some events are important to get in the Olympics, like wrestling. Like without the Olympics, now where does wrestling go? Mm-hmm. Like without wrestling, without
there's
the Olympics,
not a professional league or
anything. No, there's high school and college in the U.S., which we have a huge pedigree. But then, and then there's world competitions and stuff. But
well, then they can convert them into MMA.
Yeah, you know, it would be like putting BMXing in the Olympics, which they could do. Like in the Winter Olympics, now you have like snowboarding type events and stuff like that, which they're starting to do. But they're all judged.
Like you said, if they evaluated it based on if they had like. Three different workouts or something. You know what I mean? If they like broke it down, like you're doing Fran or whatever tested.
Well, I think that's how we think, but that's what makes CrossFit unique and the competitive side of it is that's part of the mystery of you don't know. And if you're going to be the best in the world, you got to be ready for whatever's thrown at you. And that's the idea. So I kind of disagree with you guys. I get where you're going.
But I think you're thinking too much like a businessman consumer, whereas the Olympics don't fucking think like that. Like they don't think the way you're thinking. They don't think, oh my God, people would love to watch this, the mystery behind it. They are terrible.
Yeah,
you don't think the Olympics are a business?
I do think they're a business, but I think when it comes to evaluating and putting sports up, I think there's a lot more politics and shit involved. Yeah. Like,
I'm not disagreeing
with politics, but I think to discount that there's not major thought that goes into the business side of the Olympics is silly.
You would have to I mean, it's more politics than business. I'll tell you what.
How many countries
will host an Olympics, will build a stadium for it, will spend money on it, and then the Olympics is gone and it's a fucking ghost town? Like in China, there's what they did for the Chinese Olympics. There's these stadiums that they built. They're just there now. Do you make money off the Olympics coming to your country? A lot of countries lose money. The reason why they want it is to display their national, you know, pride and stuff like that. It's a lot different nowadays, and it's very difficult. And the big question is,
Doug,
would CrossFit
even
want
to Google
be in the
fact
Olympics?
Check this. I would love to see what the average, you know, city makes from Olympics coming into their city. I think Sal's way off on this one. I think the reason why they build stadiums and do that is because it brings millions of dollars to the city.
I think it's
very much so a business.
I think they lose, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, Google it up. Let's see.
Yeah. I've read lots of studies on how cities have lost money, but a lot of them don't care. It's like they want that national pride. Like China really wanted to demonstrate themselves to the world that they can organize this incredible event, and they did.
Well, you know where you make a lot of money is when you host the Super Bowl to an existing stadium you already have, right? Mm-hmm. Like, oh my God, does that bring a lot of business to your way?
You definitely can, absolutely.
Yeah, I know for sure. I'm curious about the Olympics.
Yeah, I think it's different though, like, because you have to build these humongous structures, so that definitely costs.
Yeah, and you have to ask yourself, like, would CrossFit even be interested in, you know, doing the Olympics? Would it be wise for them to do it? I don't know.
I mean,
does that say that it made them $25 billion right there?
No,
I think it cost them $25
billion. Yeah. It's, you know, I'll tell you what, Brazil, in fact, there were protests in Brazil over the Olympics because people there were saying, why are you spending money on the Olympics when we need
those poverty that's right there?
Yeah, we need all this shit. So it's like this big debate going on. What does it say there, Doug?
It says strikingly little evidence that such events increase tourism or draw new investment. Spending lavishly on short-lived event is, economically speaking, a dubious long-term strategy.
Yeah, even you know what's funny?
It's dubious.
Even stadiums, even when cities build stadiums, what they'll do is they'll, and this is the debate too with a stadium, right? Let's say you're a city and you want to build a stadium so you can have a sports team. Where do they get the money for the stadium? A lot of them comes from your tax dollars. So they're taxing people to build the stadium that costs X amount of billions of dollars. Then they're going to put a team in there. And then the only people that can really afford to go to games are like wealthy people. And it's like this debate, like you're taxing everybody to pay for something that everybody's going to benefit from. And businesses aren't necessarily making money. It's actually quite the debate. But with the Olympics, when the Olympics is concerned, it's a lot of politics. Not as much business as you would even think. Just kind of crazy.
Well, it'd be interesting to see. I still, you know, financially or not, I still think they're heading in that direction. I think if you were to talk to like Glassman or you might even be able to Google that, like with thoughts on CrossFit moving in that direction to try and get in there.
Well, I know bodybuilding is never going to get in the Olympics.
Yeah, no. Because now that makes sense because there's no.
Well, bodybuilding is actually.
At least CrossFit has some metrics to work with, right?
Right.
Well, there's a lot of judged events in, I mean, there's, you know, there's synchronized swimming, there's, you know, there's all kinds of different events.
That's a good point.
There's a lot, but and bodybuilding is done all over the world. It's a worldwide sport. The problem is the drugs. Like when Mr. Olympia won't be able to compete in the Olympics, now what? You know what I'm saying? Because most of the money that goes to bodybuilding comes from the U.S. And none of those athletes would pass any freaking drug test.
Oh, my God.
You know?
That's so true.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. See, it says there, sports standardization for CrossFit. Yeah, that would be a big one. Justin, I wanted to ask you about Wim Hof.
Yeah.
You never talked about that.
I had a great experience with that. Yeah, that's right.
Because we hosted the Wim Hof.
You didn't even look cold, bro.
Dude, I went into that arrogantly. I'm just going to put it out there. Like, we went through a bunch of the actual breathing techniques and the sequence that, you know, Wim Hof sort of, he has a protocol specifically to how to kind of get to this like ecstasis state, right? To kind of get outside of yourself and to really calm down and tap into that autonomic system. So that was like perfect timing for me because like I had like the most stressful week ever. And it wasn't even like anything insanely chaotic was happening. Like specifically, it was just the accumulation of like many things. And then, you know, before that, I actually like I had the worst abdominal pain in my life, went to the hospital and everything to check out and get scanned, make sure nothing was, you know, super wrong with me.
Just turned out you needed a good poop.
Just turned out, man. You know, had some blockage.
How much of the actual course were you able to sit in on? Did you sit in?
I did the first day, so I prefaced that because I had a lot going on. I didn't get to do the second day, but yeah, I sat in through the whole thing. So
okay,
so yeah, I went through the whole protocol, and so you do like these 30 breaths. So it's mainly focused on hyperoxygenating the body. So. We don't take really big, deep breaths, and we don't really understand how to fill up your lungs completely. And so,
did she talk about why that is? Why we're all short breathers, or we're chest breathers?
I think it's your posture, and it's just your body's just kind of acclimating to like, you know, just being in a seated position or, just like doing daily tasks. Like you're not really like, you have to be really intentional to fill your lungs to that capacity. So,
you know, they do studies on that and they show that when people are in, like moderately stressful situations, like we have every day, right?
Mm-hmm.
That you breathe more shallow.
Yeah.
And that when people are placed in really relaxing, situations, then they naturally will start to do the full diaphragmatic breathing. And I mean, I think it has to do with the fact that the shallow breathing, that's your fight or flight,
yeah,
you know, breath. And in the short term, it's better to breathe that way. Like if a lion walks in the room, you're better off breathing shallow so you get the fuck out because that's your quick, you know, your quick reaction. But if you do that all day, it's actually detrimental.
Yeah. And what's interesting, like if you notice when you do cardio or when you're actually running, your heartbeat is really pounding, like how you get to that state where, you know, you get a little bit of euphoria from it and you feel these good effects. Cause like, I guarantee some of that has to do with like hyperoxygenating the body and getting, you know, more air in. And so anyway, we did these drills where we're really expanding the rib cage and kind of like stimulating here in the sternum and just getting in tune with, you know, how to be more expansive with that breath and also like breathe through the belly and then fill that up and then into the chest. And I mean, really, it's boring to talk about, but it was really impactful to go through. So it's one of those things
that works.
You just have to go through it and you have to do it. And applying it is really difficult. Because you have to literally just be intentional with it. You do 30 breaths, like you do this full huge breath, like inhale, and then you get rid of it. You exhale and quickly, and then you go right back into a big, deep breath, and you do that for 30, and then you hold on the exhale on the last bit, which was something that I found difficulty in because what you're doing now is you're trying to calm down that panic in your body, right? So when you don't have air and you don't, like, your first reaction is to want to, oh, I got to breathe again. I got to fill back up. And so just that quieting that noise, because you have to realize your body has plenty of oxygen at this point. You know, you've been going through all these breaths and getting all this oxygen in. You can hold your breath for a really long time once you get past that initial point of panic. And so for me, that was really what I carried over into then into the ice bath part of it. So
you do that
three cycles. So the last part, I'll just like get this out. So 30 breaths and then you hold. And then for as long as you can, and then right away after you have to breathe in again, you then go for 10-second hold, and then you go right back in and you do the cycle again. So you do that three times.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
and it works.
Yeah.
So how does it work then when you get in how does it work? In other words, I don't need to know the science, but what I mean is, what does it feel like getting into the ice bath after doing that versus not doing it?
Well, like I said, you kind of learn to calm like this reactive part of your body where you're like you tense up and you get into that panic fight flight you know mode. Whereas if you can suppress that a bit and it and get outside of yourself a little bit more. Like you can really like it, ease into your environment and make it work for you. So, me going into the ice, like the first time, like I was like, oh yeah, I'll go first. You know, like arrogant asshole. You know? Like, yeah, no problem. I've been in an ice before. No problem. And, but I've only been to like maybe my just right up to the chest. And so I you go in and then it went all the way up to the neck. And so just having that ice and everything go all the way up and over the chest, your body is just like, oh my God, I'm going to die.
Oh, shit. You know,
like I had this moment where my eyes got really big and then I just looked up and I seriously was in panic. And then I just remembered, you know, because you lose it right then, because that's the first shock of it. I was like, I lost. Oh, shit. And I opened my mouth real wide. I'm like, you know, trying to get breaths in. And I couldn't breathe because it's restrictive.
So it's like a panic.
It's a panic response. And then boom. And then that sort of kicked in where it's like, no, you know, chill, relax. And then I'm able to start kind of getting into that breathing pattern and zone. And you have to keep your hands on top of your legs, so like the closer your limbs are, you know, the less surface or you know area you have to get exposed to the cold. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I basically went through that whole process, and then it's really interesting because what you're seeking is how quickly you can get into that state. So it's a lot like all of a sudden I got myself into a flow state.
Oh wow!
Yeah, and it happened really fast because it was so shocking. And gnarly that once it was probably like a couple seconds, maybe it was like 15 seconds, but you're in there for like 2 minutes. And so like the initial shock, the first time I did, I was like, oh God, I'm going to die. And then I finally calmed down and then, oh, this isn't bad. And then it was totally chill.
Do you know when you read Rise of Superman, they talk about this is really like the process that you're going through is really similar to getting into the flow state, right? Mm-hmm. That's exactly what happens. And that's also why, you know, extreme sports have so much success with it because it's this life or death. You feel like you're flipping upside down. Oh my God, I got to die. Like that's your, like the average person, just if you were to try to do a double backflip off a fucking huge ramp.
Yeah.
We all would go, oh, so
this is a lot safer way to do that.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So which is great about it. Then that's what I appreciated. So then after that, you get out and it's great because you get into this kind of horse stance. So it's kind of like a power stance. So you sit into it a bit. So you engage your muscles in your legs. And then what you do is you basically punch across and you're doing like a core rotation and you're really you're inhaling as you go one way and then you're exhaling the other.
Tai Chi shit.
It's like Tai Chi, but it felt a little bit more like, you know, those Fijian warrior guys that are just like, and you do all that stuff and they're playing cool music with Wim Hof. Actually, he writes his own music. He plays guitar and he does this like cool tribal kind of singing. And so there's a track like that going on. It was really cool, dude. It was like, for me, I'm not into the whole like, you know, I hate to say this, but the more like the woo, like yogi kind of.
Yeah, it
like,
turns you
yeah.
off.
You know, let's all get in. You know. Like I'm like, oh, okay, I can get
why
in
the voice.
Like, oh, well, you know, let's
and
do this. Like,
talking about flow. Okay, so there's a reason why
like,
that is.
Like, it was like warrior.
You require right now. Okay, so and this is like levels of getting better at getting into the flow state, like your macro, micro levels. And so when you do something so extreme that you're a physical person, right? So putting you in a situation that felt life or death helps force you in.
Thank you for bringing that up. Yeah, because for me, my initial reaction is to tense. And so what I do to overcome stress is to over tense. So like for me, like lifting weights, for example, like I want to squeeze as hard as I can to get through it. And my go-to operating system is full throttle. You know, and for me to just barrel my way through.
And this is the opposite.
And I could not do that, dude, with this at all. It really fucked me up. And you notice that when you watch some of the other guys that were a little more like had meditative practices, you could tell who actually has meditative practices in their program. Because when they got in, you just watch and their demeanor changed. And then they got into that state really quickly. And they were able to just chill in there. And I was like, oh my God, dude. I was like, ah!
It kind of makes you realize like how much of our the difficulties we have in everyday life fucking really have mind. To do with just us.
Yeah, in
it
our
is.
Mind, dude.
You know, like literally your body is telling you to panic,
mm-hmm.
but you're not in any dangers. You know, sitting in ice water for 2 minutes, if you're a healthy individual, is not dangerous. You're fine. You're not going to die. But your body makes you feel like you are, at least your mind is.
Mm-hmm.
And we forget that we are the drivers of that.
Yeah.
So did you get a chance? I love numbers and stats. Did you get a chance to hear her talk about, like, as humans, like how much it's been recorded that we can actually control our internal temperature?
No.
They didn't address that? I'd be interested to see what some of the
as far as yeah
I know I've heard numbers like like some monks
might
have been
in
known
their notes,
to,
yeah.
to be able to lower or raise their temperature by like 20 degrees or something crazy. Like that's crazy when you think
20.
Well, there's yeah, a Vice there's crazy. A whole Vice document
that's what
on
I want
to
know
Wim Hof, so I'm gonna have to go back and kind of go through that.
Yeah, we need to look that up because 20
fascinating.
20 yeah, no, would, I'm just, you'd be like dead.
I'm throwing some arbitrary number yeah. out there. I don't know if it's
because even if you could raise it and lower by 4 degrees, that's like incredible. 20, my God, you'd be. I don't think your heart would.
Yeah, I know. That's why I want to know if they talked about it.
So that whole process right after that. So that was all to start like raising your core temperature again, and so like you know pulling all that like I was you're drying yourself by intensifying your core and then your major muscle groups. And so, yeah, so it was interesting. And it's interesting to see where you have poor circulation too, with like your hands, your fingers, your feet. And for me, the second time through, I really noticed my feet, you know, not having as good enough of circulation. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that I would apply. You could even use like, just put your feet in an ice bath or like your hands specifically to work on improving that.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
See what you know, it's interesting because we get in our own way a lot by saying things like, oh, I'm not into the, you know, that woo-woo stuff. I'm not into that. And we've all said it. And it's like we get in our own way. You know what I mean? Because
totally.
It prevents us from trying things that very well may have some incredible application. Like you said so yourself, like you could tell the guys and girls who meditated because they get in there in that ice bath and they were able to chill or, you know, no pun intended, a little faster.
Yeah, I think exactly. And I think that's an ego thing. You know, for me, it's just this, it's all in how it's presented, right? So if it's about improvement and performance, like this was a more about human performance
and so you were like
controlling controlling your,
if it was about balancing your pink chakra, then you'd be like,
I'm like, I'll sit this one out, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not gonna wear those pants and shit, I'm not doing it.
Damn,
Roy, you're a physical feedback guy, and this is why, like I said, why there's a lot of success and why we've seen this rapid growth in extreme sports is you don't have a choice. Like you get dropped into an ice bath and it's like you start fucking panting like crazy and you're gonna be fucked, right? It's like
exactly.
It kind of forces you fit where
oh, it was so good for me that, you know, I needed that.
Right. So cuz sit you in a dark room, close your eyes and fold your legs and say, "Hey, get in the flow state." It's like, "Come on, bro, fuck off." You know, like all I'm doing right now is thinking about everything else, right?
Step right up, all you bearded men and all you bearded ladies. This quad's brought to you by Big Top Beard Company, whose all-natural beard oil products not only make your beard smell amazing, but feel amazing, too. Their organic essential oil blends transport you to manly places like the mountains, the desert, the sea, and beyond, all while encouraging a lot of beard nuzzling to boot. Buy it for yourself or as a gift for that special bearded someone at BigTopBeardCompany.com. Enter the discount code MINDPUMP for 33% off at checkout.
Speaking of this weekend too, we had Brink in here. He sent over an email over to us. Had some. I know a lot of his clients listen to the show. What's up with the email?
Yeah, he had some clients between ages 45 and 60. They're in good shape. However, they become obsessed with their own mobility. And so that's where their focus is gone. And now they feel like they're having a hard time staying in the game as far as the workouts are concerned, and they're concerned that they're losing their aesthetics and strength.
Mm.
There's some questions here. One from a 56-year-old female. She's been in treatment with him for 1.5 months, and this is what she says. After a month of doing the mobility movements and not lifting, I'm starting to freak out a bit because I may be losing my muscularity. It's been an identity for me for a long time, And while the mobility is really satisfying, way more than lifting for sure, it's going to take me a while to build enough mobility and a strong enough core to build muscle with it. Any guidance about how to manage this identity change? I'm softening up and I don't like it.
This is close to home for me. This is what I'm going through right now. So I can totally relate to this. Being a guy who, if you've listened to this podcast since the beginning, I've been, you know, I used to say like, I'm all show, no go. Like all I care about is I want to look good, you know? And of course I was in men's physique. So that was my main focus. And now I've made this transition into, you know, mobility, and I've dove headfirst full on into it, completely embraced it, challenged myself to not care about, I'm not taking any mirror selfies. I'm not weighing myself. I'm not checking my body fat percentage. I've completely embraced the concept that I'm going to work from the inside out and work on all my imbalances and my neurological connections and poor patterning and get my body working optimally. And, you know, I would be lying to say that that isn't a mental challenge for me. It's fucking hard, man. It's really hard, especially when you talk about a guy like me who had deep-rooted insecurities with being smaller. And, you know, I was literally in the suite at this concert last weekend and ran into Navarro Bowman, and I hadn't seen him since last year. And I was competing the last time I'd seen him. And the very first time I'd met him, and he was with a couple other Niners and walked up and he was like, damn, dude. He walked over and he grabbed my shoulders, my arm. And it's like, dude, to have someone, a guy of size and power and as known as someone like Navarro Bowman, like looking at me and touching my muscles and being all in awe for that, fucking ego just went, felt amazing, right?
I wanted Navarro Bowman to touch me.
So I ran into him the weekend and said, what's up? And he comes walking up to me and he grabs me on my arms and he goes, what happened, bro? And I thought, oh, dude, just a fucking knife right into the ego. And I just kind of chuckled and kind of shared a little bit of my journey, what's been going on. We got caught up and stuff. But point being that, you know, that's something that I have to work on all the time. And, you know, those uncomfortable feelings that I have, I just have to remind myself that on the other side of that is growth, you know? So I instead of like being frustrated with it, I go like, you know what? Like, I'm so much better today about that and dealing with that than I was just 2-3 years ago, and definitely 5 years before that, and most certainly 10 years before that. So if I'm still feeling this way, to me, it's like, oh, I still have room for growth here. So instead of looking at it like, oh my God, it's like the thing with building muscle, I know that I can focus on building muscle, like especially the muscle that you've already put on your body already. That shit will come back so fast if that's something that I want. But this, what I'm doing for my body as far as mobility, like that's going to carry on for so much longer and is so much more beneficial. And so, you know, if you feel like, you know, this is something that you have, and then 100%, and I know in the rest of the question, she even calls herself out, right? And says that she knows that it's, you know, self-esteem and self-image and self-confidence. You know, I think the best advice I can, saying that I'm going through it with you, is that, you know, look at that. Like if it bothers you, if it's a challenge, that means there's opportunity for growth in that area. And instead of turning back or getting frustrated, embrace it more and go forward. Because I think the further you go with that, the more comfortable you'll become. And so for me, like part of that too is like wearing clothes that I would like disguise myself so I don't look skinny or small or doing those things. And instead of that, I'm embracing that and being comfortable with who I am. And I know that sounds weird as a man who's been in men's physique to talk like this, but it's fucking real, you know? And I think that a lot of people don't share that and don't say that. And I'll tell you right now, 90% of those men and women that get on stage that most people idolize and look at their physiques, most of them have the biggest insecurities out of the average person. So to say that they don't, they're full of shit, you know? Like that's what normally drove those people to be so neurotic about getting in shape. So for me, you know, if I feel like I'm struggling with that, then that's a reflection for myself that there's a lot of room for growth still there.
Think when we look at this, a couple things with her. She's been doing this for 1 month, okay? And she's a 58-year-old female. Now,
56.
Your situation is more extreme. And it, there's a couple questions I'd want to ask you because there is a dramatic difference, right, in the way you look from when you competed to now. But are all things equal? Is your nutrition as meticulous? Is your, in terms of calories and protein, are you on the same level of androgens? Are you as consistent with your workouts? Because I would argue, and I'll argue this all day long, that if you take most people who are natural, who work out consistently to build muscle, and if they make a targeted effort for mobility training, that they're not going to see a huge decrease in muscle. Yeah. They're just not.
Yes and no. This is where I'm going to defend her on this. Is it's hard to live in both worlds. And you tend to, and you're right on everything you said about me. So 100%. I mean, my testosterone level is probably 50% less than what it was when I was competing. I'm not counting calories. I'm for sure under consuming protein intake on quite a few days, you know, in the month. My training routine is way more inconsistent. So I definitely would have a closer to aesthetic physique had I kept all those things up. But part of me really embracing it actually was to let go of that stuff. So, and maybe that's part of where she's going through that too. And so I looked at it like
you went all in with it,
yeah,
instead of trying to hybridize
Keep
both
together.
Because
then I feel like I would be, you know, flirting with one and not really fully committing. Like there's a reason why committed is tattooed on my forearm. Like if I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to go all in. And if I'm going to truly say I'm going to
do this. Somewhat polar energy forces.
They
right?
are.
Yeah.
They
well,
are.
And that's my point is that yours is pretty extreme in the sense that you were a competitive physique competitor. Mm. This is 1 month in and she's talking about how she's afraid of losing muscularity. I bet you if we saw her picture from the beginning to the end of 30 days, we wouldn't notice that big of a difference. I think more of this is in her. I think much more of this is in her mind.
All of it's in the head. That's what I'm trying to get at is all of it's in the head. But it's okay. It's okay that she feels this way, and I can identify with, you know, making a shift from being someone that was so heavily focused on building a muscular physique. And the reason why I can identify so much is because I guarantee I'm even more extreme. But that's what I meant by, you know, go deeper. You know what I'm saying? Let it go. It's not. I'll tell you right now. You could, as hard as you've worked. I've worked for 15 plus years on building this muscular physique, and I completely have like let that side go to completely focus on mobility. And you're right, Sal's right. I could be having more of a balance. I could be focusing. I could keep more of an aesthetic look while I'm doing this. But that's just it. Part of this process for me is letting that go and not caring about it and being okay with that. So I'm by me kind of letting go of all that is also me kind of challenging me mentally that I can be okay with it. Now, what you're going to see with me real soon here, so ironically that we're talking about this, is I'm about to shift gears again and really dial in all my training, my diet, tracking my steps again. And I'm going to start to build on this really mobile physique that I've been working on for the last year. So you're going to get to see both. But part of me really embracing this mobility side too was knowing that it was what I needed, not only physically, but also mentally. And part of that had to do with I wanted to let go of that. And I am intentionally not caring about muscularity.
I get that, but I'm wondering how much, if you took the typical, you know, gym rat, someone who's consistent with their workouts, if you took them and changed their workout from focusing constantly on building mass and changed it to more mobility, full range of motion type movements, and their diet doesn't have to change. If they're eating healthy before, they could eat the same after. It's just the workout that changes. I don't think you're going to see people, except for those that are on the extreme levels, I don't think you're going to see people go from this dramatic change in how they look. Yeah. I've done it many times. My body weight changes a few pounds, which is nothing. If I go strict, you know, conditioning, mobility type stuff versus we've had people do MAPS performance who've come out and said, I'm surprised I built more muscle. Mm. It's surprising. I think most of this is misconstrued, oh shit, if I stop training like a bodybuilder, I'm going to lose all this muscle.
Well, I knew too that if I was going to really embrace the mobility side, that I couldn't. I felt it.
Like, I would start training and I would get that itch, that drive for the bodybuilder side of me to build muscle when I knew damn well that I need to be putting more work into my mobility. And when you're training and you're lifting heavy and you're trying, I mean, we created programs to live in both worlds. So let's be honest, it's possible.
It's integrative.
Yes, it's integrative. It's possible. You can do it. But where I'm going with this and where I can just totally relate with how she feels right now, and if you want to break the psychological part, then try. The answer isn't find a way to do it to make sure you keep as much muscle and find mobility. It's embracing it.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying to find a way. I'm saying for most people, if you're not cutting your testosterone in half, you're not going from eating 3,500 calories a day to eating 2,000 calories, you're not doing all these other crazy drastic changes, which, by the way, had you done those changes and kept your routine complete bodybuilding, you would have seen a dramatic change in your body.
Well, I can speak to from strength element of it, right? So, just living in the mobility side for quite some time, like a lot like Adam is talking about, like there's a period where you really start to kind of get into that phase where like, this is benefiting my body. I'm doing all this for my joints and I'm trying to work on range of motion and I feel really good and charged and all this. Now I have to kind of, if I've been focusing on that for a long enough period of time, there's a lot of like friction there for me to now ramp back up and start working on my strength gains and start deadlifting really heavy again and, you know, squatting heavy. And, it's a challenge. Let's be honest. Either way, like, you know it's benefiting you, but at the same time, like, you need to start thinking ahead. You need to start adding and implementing these things so now we can kind of bridge our way back to that integrative approach where it's all included.
And remember, and keep this in mind, like, if you start making, it can take some time. Like, I took my belt off and changed my grip on deadlifts for, like, 8 months. I didn't deadlift over 450 pounds for 8 months. And I was a regular 500-plus pound puller all the time. And I had to drop the weight, go double overhand grip, take my belt off. I didn't lose any muscle. Or if I did, it was a little bit. It wasn't much. It wasn't totally noticeable. I just went back to using my belt again, and I can already see I'm getting close to where I was lifting before. But now I feel more connected to the weight, and I feel different. I think for most people, you focus on mobility. If you lose aesthetics, it's going to be small. When you go back to training for aesthetics after having fixed a lot of your mobility issues, you'll probably achieve better aesthetics, better balance, better movement because your range of motion and control are going to be much better.
Yeah.
In the long run, your aesthetics will benefit. Now, I'm not talking to the super small minority of people who go on a stage and compete because that is such an extreme expression of aesthetics that in order to look like that, you have to be that extreme. You know what I'm saying? You have to do all the stuff that's extreme to do that. But most people, like this 56-year-old woman, if she fixes her mobility issues, connection issues, and then over time, let's say over the course of 6 months or however long it takes, because it can take a while. It can take as long as a year, right? She goes back to some of her older exercises and focuses on building muscle. I bet you she's going to come out of it looking better with less effort than she did before.
Oh, no, absolutely. You know? I think that's the fear.
She's generating that momentum.
That's it.
The fear we have, right, is, and I think why I'm a great example is because I am so extreme that, I mean, if I were to go take my body fat test right now, okay, I'm pretty good at this because I've done this so many times. I'm probably sitting at about 180 something pounds of actually lean body mass. And when I was at the peak of my competing, I was up to about 208. So that's a fucking lot of muscle. Yeah. That's a lot
20
of
muscle. Pounds.
But I will tell you something right
Over
now.
20 pounds.
You'd be surprised how fast I'll get that back. It's not as, once you've been there.
Of course.
It's really actually easy. It's a lot of work to get one more pound of muscle. But it's amazing how, I'm blown away by it every time I do this.
Now, do you adjust testosterone levels with that, along with that? Like, hey, I'm going to build muscle now. I'm going to take more.
Oh, if I was competing, I would. This time, okay. I won't.
So this time, keep it the same.
Yeah. I mean, if you
keep it at replacement,
I'm not going to try and get to my competitive. I'm not,
because it'd be interesting to see how much, because there's zero science around this, like studies at least, but anecdotally we see it, right? It'd be interesting to see how much that makes a difference. You know what I mean? Versus, okay, here's the androgen levels I was at before, and this is how much lean body mass, and now how much lean body mass.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
it'd be interesting to see if you could match it.
Yeah. I think if I
better
think,
training.
I think if I was, you know, lifting as, here's the thing, like, there's times like now where I know I need a lift for muscle reasons, like to build. Like I need, if I want to keep building size or maintain size, I go into today's workout. But then in my head goes, what I really could use is like an hour of just movement, you know, mace bells, Indian clubs, doing some of our maps anywhere and priming fortification sessions. And I could spend a whole hour plus just doing that. And you guys don't see a lot of work that I do at home and outside of here. Like to get where I'm at, like where my mobility is now, that has been a lot of dedication purely to that. And
it's been like 2 years.
Yeah. And not that long, maybe, but it's been a solid year of
maybe more
really, really addressing it to where and it's been a process. The beginning was, I was a little resistant at the beginning. And to be honest, when I watch you work on your mobility right now, it reminds me of where I was at when I first started really trying. Then I got to a point where like, dude, I want to be able to sit in ass to grass, bro, with 300 pounds on my back and feel comfortable. I want to be able to do a pistol squat. I want to be able to take myself with an overhead, you know, barbell overhead press and not feel like I have forward head. I can't even put my back flat against a wall with a wall press. Like I have all these things that I've been like measuring and going after. And that has become so, I've been so focused on that, that all the other shit is not a priority. And, you know, someone who's 56 may have as many imbalances as I do, and that could require a lot of that work. And it's your body. That's the beautiful thing. Like, if you feel that you need to go the other direction, that's fine. But what I will tell you is, even let's pretend like you decided to do what I did, which is just say, fuck it, I'm not going to worry about the muscle thing. It's actually really easy to get it back. It is not that. What is a lot of work and a lot of dedication is to put the time and effort you need to put in to repattern bad patterns that you've created for 40, 50 years.
Yeah.
And that may require her to let go of the weight training so much and become heavily focused just on the movement and the patterning. Then when you get good at that, then going and kind of switching, but don't be afraid. Don't be afraid that you're going to lose a ton of muscle. I promise you, you'd be so blown away by how much you'll get that back. Quick interruption by our sponsors, you guys. Lots of people have been asking us how they can support the Mind Pump Mafia family. Our first one is our Chimera Coffee that we love. You guys go to chimeracoffee.com. That's Chimera with a K for 10% off. Don't forget Mind Pump at the checkout. We also have our BigTopBeardCompany.com for 33% off. Also, Mind Pump at the checkout. Also, Brain FM. We talk so much about this for sleep and meditation. It's Brain.FM for 20% off. Also, Mind Pump at the checkout. You guys, we also talk a lot about books on here all the time. We're using that Audible. You guys can get a free trial, 30-day trial, plus one free audiobook if you go to audibletrial.com/mindpump. And then last, we get lots of people asking about Ben Greenfield's CBD supplement, so we hit him up to hook you guys up. You go to getnaturedblend.com/mindpump for that discount.
Next question is from Dr. Kuv. What is your most recent nightmare?
Oof.
What do you fear as an adult?
So we're talking about literal nightmare, like I went to sleep and had a bad dream.
I think
that's what they
Sure.
Well, I don't think you have to say a literal. What stresses you out right now?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
because as an adult, that's probably the clue. I don't even have nightmares anymore. I have a nightmare, I can control it.
Yeah. I'll start because I know Sal's going to say something about kids. Because I'm going to say something about kids first.
Oh,
dude! After a couple scares and going to the ER,
you've had a couple recent ones.
Yeah, like. That's what keeps me up at night sometimes. Sometimes just like you just hear noises or whatever and then like this instant panic and then I just jump out of bed and then run out and I just make sure like that noise wasn't coming from downstairs or my boys are downstairs. So yeah, but like that's the thing now because of those two things. It's like this crazy, insane just panic and you know like fear and it's real,
dude. Have you ever
never had that before.
Have you ever lost your kids for like a second?
Oh, lost them, like yeah
fucking worst feeling.
Once
fuck it. I remember when my son, god, he must have been, let's see, five, I mean he was real young, and we had just bought a house and we were remodeling it, so we were living with my in-laws for a month while remodeling the other house.
Mm-hmm.
And we put my son to bed, and we were all sharing a room upstairs in my in-law's house. And so he was in sleep. And he was young. Again, I think he was five. And it was hot, summertime, so we had the window open. And we go downstairs, and we're all watching a movie or whatever. And at the time, my wife goes upstairs, like she's going to go to bed. And all of a sudden, she comes down the stairs. She goes, where's Domenico? And we're like, what? And I knew the window was open to the bedroom. And this fucking panic came over me like I've never experienced in my entire life. Because he's in the house. The window's open. He's a small child. Where would he be, right?
Yeah.
I flew up the stairs. I think I took two steps and cleared the entire stairs.
And what had happened? Superhuman like reactions. Yeah.
Like crazy. And what had happened was he had walked into the closet and fallen asleep. And we couldn't find him for a grand total of 1 minute.
Oh, no.
It was literally 60 seconds, but it was the most
terror.
The most terrifying 60 seconds of my life. Brutal. And you know what's funny? I don't know, Justin, if you kind of realize this yourself, but I realized after having kids, like, there was nothing to be scared of before I had kids. Like, I look back, I'm like, what the fuck was I worried about?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's trivial. Yeah, you know, like that's how I feel about it now. But like, you know, it was real then.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like just the face, like, so yeah, my son was choking and he had swallowed a marble, and it was like a big marble and it was lodged. And so, like, you know, my wife was the first to find him and then brought him upstairs, and I was like, you know, dead asleep. And then she's like, ah, and then I was like, ah. And then she's the nurse, and so she's calling, and I figure, like, hey, you know, like she was like losing it, and I was like trying, okay, I have to be the one to like keep everybody together here. And so, like, you know, was okay, here's what we're gonna do, you know. And meanwhile, like, my son's turned white, you know, and like, and so we put him, we opened up the freezer door, and we have him in there just to calm his throat so he could breathe in air. And then that was able to loosen up a bit, and it was able to kind of pass. But and then the ambulance came and everything, and then it finally just went all the way, and so we were good. But like, it was like lodged there for like, and you couldn't get it. You couldn't do Heimlich. You couldn't do any of that.
It wasn't
stuff.
In his windpipe though.
No.
Okay.
So yeah, we dodged a bullet with that, and then he just passed it out. You know.
Scary. Yeah.
That was the scariest thing that's ever happened to me.
It gives me anxiety.
Besides kids, because that's an obvious one. You know what would be one of my biggest nightmares would be to be in a situation where you feel like, for me at least, where I'm worthless. You know what I mean? Like, okay, I want to start a business, or I want to go become employed or do something like that, and I don't have anything to offer anybody, mm-hmm. and I feel like I don't have any value. I think that would be that was. A nightmare for me for a little while. And I think it was mainly because I did not go the formal education route. I went, you know, I worked for a large company. I managed gyms, and then I owned my own business. And, you know, there was a little bit of that insecurity of not having a degree, not having, you know, those letters or whatever, that, you know, that diploma, and having a little bit of the fear, like, whoa, you know, like, am I going to have value if I need to go work for someone, or if I got to start something else? And I think that was more based on, I guess, an insecurity at the time. But, you know, now as an adult, besides that, I don't know if I can think of too much else. I guess it's all revolved around my kids. Like, if I think of anything that really scares me, like natural disaster, it's around, like, oh my God, what's going to happen to my kids? Or, you know, illness, like, if I get sick.
Well, spiders.
Yeah, besides spiders, yeah. I guess that would be it.
Yeah, I don't know if I definitely don't have a recent nightmare. I can't even tell you the last time I even had a nightmare. And a fear as an adult. Fuck me, dude. I don't, and I think this is where I'm like Sal, maybe. Like, if there is, like, the only thing I can relate to this is what stresses me out, or what could like cause like a major state change for me where I'm just like super irritable, or I flash on somebody, or I'm out of character to where it's just keeping me up at night. I can't sleep. I'm really good though now, I think, of being aware of when I feel that coming on, or if I get like that, and putting into practice some of the things that I do to bring that down and to relax. And for me, it's kind of similar to what Sal said. Like, mine is getting stuck in this place, like where I don't have growth, right? Where the business isn't growing, where I'm not growing, where I'm just kind of like, you know, that clock puncher, like, even though I'm the furthest thing from that, but that's part of what makes me not that guy, is that's a big fear of mine. Like, and I know in the back of my head, I've always like, when I dive into something, right, and we're going to build a new business or do something, I go like, well, I always know that if shit doesn't work out, you know, I could always go this, I could do this job, you know, I could go work for somebody from 9 to 5. I could make, you know, 6-figure income and I could live and I could be fine. But that's my greatest fear. Like, that's not what I ever want to do. And I think that's what motivates me. And there's this, you know, fear inside that that could happen. And so that's a lot of what drives me. Now, when I realize that it's bleeding into my relationships with others is when I address it, right? So, you know, really easily, like in this current business that we're in right now, I've already experienced this multiple times where we go through these growth spurts or where we get to hit these lulls and the business seems stagnant. And in business, you're either growing or dying. It's not, you know, anyone who ever says that it's stagnant or staying the same is full of shit. So, you know, the moment that it's stagnant, that's the moment it's dying to me. So when we go through those moments in the business, it stresses me out. It'll keep me up at night and, you know, that will drive me crazy. Like, I don't have nightmares. I don't do that. If I had a nightmare, I've at one point in my life, I've figured out how to control them. So I normally end up stabbing the guy and killing him, and I come out to be like the superhero, right? Or bring the chick home, like, you know. So yeah. Nightmares actually go my way. So it's whenever they start off bad, but they end up really heroic. So
you do lucid dreaming.
Yeah, well, I don't know what you call it.
Yeah, lucid is when you know you're dreaming, so you can start to control what's going on.
It's funny you say that. It only seems lucid, though, if it becomes a nightmare. If it becomes a nightmare, like, I have this ability to go,
then
like,
you control it.
Yeah.
So if it's not a nightmare, you're not aware of that.
Yeah, if it's not a nightmare, I'm normally deep asleep. But if it's scary or, you know, something that someone's chasing me or you get something like that, like, right away, I'm like, this ain't real.
Dude, I used to get those dreams, like, when I was a kid, and then later when, you know, when you wake up, or you think you're awake, but you're not awake yet, and it feels like somebody's like sitting or like stepping on your chest, and like I couldn't like really breathe.
Yeah, that's a common one. I've never had that before.
That's Satan.
It was totally Satan, bro.
Yeah, it's a devil. It's a demon.
I know.
I was like,
be gone, demon! And then I was fine because I have Jesus.
They say dreams are fucking strange. It's such a mystery. Like, there's so many different theories. The one that I tend to, you know, believe in, or at least the one that resonates most with me, is that you have particular feelings and emotions, and you go to sleep with these emotions, and your brain tries to make sense of the emotions by creating creating a consciousness around it. And since you're not awake, it invents it. So if you're, you know, if you've got all these problems that are mounting and you're stressed out about it and then you go to sleep, it could maybe be like this big monster that you can't get away from and that's chasing you. Or maybe you're super insecure about your appearance and so then you have a dream that your teeth are falling out. Or you're really afraid of doing a presentation, so you dream that you're naked,
or that
you forgot to study for a test. You know, like, it's like your feelings
like a whole
getting manifested.
On,
we have it.
Oh, you do. Mm-hmm. Interpreting your dreams. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's pretty interesting.
I mean, I definitely think that's to me that's.
It sounds common sense. Like,
yeah, that's how I feel. Stuff, I mean, it's on your mind, your brain trying to put something together.
Or it's the last movie you watched, you know, a couple of days ago.
Yeah, it's because that's in your mind, right? Yeah, that's the last thing you just consumed or whatever.
I guess the another, you know, one direction this kind of makes me want to ask you guys is, you know, we have fears, right, as an adult. Is it, I guess there's got to be a balance between letting a fear drive you and letting it be the only thing that drives you, right?
Because
a fear, being fear driven tends to make us behave in ways.
You could use fear, you know, in order to kind of like, you know, propel you forward.
They say on the other side of fear is success. So I think there's nothing wrong with being afraid and having that. Like, that's kind of like goes.
You just got to recognize.
This goes back to the question that we were just talking about. Like, so a fear of mine, okay, is to be skinny like I was in high school again and lose all my muscle and, like, you know, feel inadequate or what, not feel buff and muscular. But that's part of like what I meant by I'm full all the way in. Like, no way. Like, I feel like I would be like putting my foot in just a little bit if I was really still kind of focused on making sure I keep as much muscle as I want. Like, no, fuck that. I'm going to embrace
this.
Wanna,
like, tip-toe.
I'm going to embrace this look, this hippie look, dude. I'm going to go all in. I'm going to become mobile. I'm going to fix all these issues. I'm not going to be insecure about this stuff. I'm going to fully commit that way. I'm going to face that fear all the way. So to me, that's kind of.
So it's not driving you, though. At that point, your fear is that, because when your fear was driving you, it would drive you to not. not going to mobility, right. Not going to that stuff. So I think the important thing is just identifying the fear, but not be driven by it in the sense where you're so scared of something that it...
controlling it versus it controlling you.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's why,
I've always had a fear of saying the wrong thing. And so now I just always say the wrong thing just to get out there first, Hey guys. Yeah.
Well, that's, you expressed that when we first started that there was, fear for you getting on the mic. It's not something you want to do. You faced that.
Absolutely. That's a fear of mine. I like to be a fly on the wall sometimes and even in conversation with close friends, we'll get into it if it's a topic but I don't feel the need to be heard as much. I don't feel like I need that. I don't need feedback from people to tell me what I am or what I'm not doing. I don't need that. I can do things myself very well and I can assess myself and what I'm capable of but my communicating that to somebody else as far as that's what I need work on. I need to be able to express my ideas better. And, so I built a nice comfort system.
I feel like definitely most of us in this room, speaking for myself, can say that I'm a fear seeker. I look for it. If something rattles me or something, I don't want to do it. Instantly,
I want to headbutt it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, instantly. And I've said this on a previous podcast that's a state change, right? If I'm cruising around my day, one of you guys says, "Hey, let's go do this," and I'm all of a sudden, either fear or doubt or insecurity comes into my mind, and I go, "Whoa, where'd that come from?" Looks like I have something to address. Because on the other side of that is success and is growth. So when you shift your mentality to, instead of trying to avoid fear and stay away from it, is looking for it in your life and conquering it. It's just growth all the time. I don't know. It's tough for me to find it. And I tell you what, I'll let you know when I come across another thing that's and I'll address it. Probably the closest thing to that now is the losing all my muscle, which I'm no longer afraid of.
Next question is from Mr. Ball Challenge.
Oh. What kind of ball challenge are we talking about here?
Well, he's currently training to be a spin instructor. He's 2 weeks in, his knees are hurting, and he's told that he rides well. So he's wondering if you think it's going to continue. And he also wants your opinion on the pros and cons of spinning.
So if you're doing something, so first off, spinning is obviously, for those of you who don't know, it's like you're riding a stationary bike in a class.
Oh,
it's very intense.
It was you're in a spinning field circle. And you're just,
tread lightly here.
Yeah. It could be one of those.
tread lightly when we talk about spinning, yoga, or runners.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's my religion.
Well, so here's the thing. So spin, typically very intense classes, they're cycle based because you're on a bike and you're following an instructor who's telling you to go more intense, less intense, simulate riding hills and, sitting on your seat and stuff like that. It's like any form of repetitive motion. If it's all you do, it will create imbalances. So if all I do is spin, I'm going to create promote some muscles to be stronger and some muscles to be tighter. I'm going to lengthen some muscles and strengthen others in positions that are good for cycling, which means I may create imbalances for walking, for lifting things up, for other types of activities. So that's the problem with spinning. The problem with spinning is the same problem that we have with any repetitive motion, is if that's all you do, it will eventually cause you problems. Now, in this particular case, if he's trained to be a spin instructor and he's already fit, I think I know who this person is, and his knees are bothering him, it may be due to an imbalance, but it also may be due to just overuse. Because at the end of the day, you can hurt because you overuse something because your body's not used to it. If you've never spinned this much in your life and all of a sudden you're spinning like crazy, even with good form and stuff, you could still get inflammatory issues in the joints that are used the most. And in this case, it's your knees. So this may be a case of you might need to spin less. You may need to focus a little bit more time on rest and recovery and maybe some, foam rolling and stretching and mobility work. Because if you push past this point, it may not be a good thing. You may cause yourself some issues in your knees. And it depends on where your knees hurt. But I've known people to get things like chondromalacia, which is, you know, inflammation and, you know, issues with the bottom of underneath the patella, which once you get to that point, kind of sucks. It's hard to to come out of it if you can come out of it. So
I think for sure address the or look into the YouTube series that I just did with Dr. Jordan Shallow. We did a whole series on hip health. And in my experience, especially with somebody who has a good physique, like I know he's in good shape aesthetically, right? So he's lifting weights, he's training. When I have somebody who their knees are bothering them from doing something like all of a sudden cycling, a lot of the times it could be related to hip health, and it could be overactive muscles and underactive muscles that are going on, and a lot of times related to the IT and TFL, and your IT runs all the way down and inserts in the front of the patella. And if that's super, super tight, that can cause stress on there. And then all you're doing is, and then when you're pedaling, that's all, you know, quad, hip flexor dominant to do that. So a lot of anterior muscles that are going on there. So you could be super overactive and tight. So opening up the hips and making sure you have good mobility before you get in. So priming your body before you get into your cycling class. I would look into that. Pros and cons. I mean, right with Sal, the pros of it, great cardio. You get to do like hills and you can do sprints and you get some of your HIIT type of cardio in there. So great for burning fat, great for burning calories. And could be interactive and fun because you have friends and a lot of hot girls take spin classes. So that's also a pro.
Yeah.
Cons. I think the biggest con I'd say is a lot of people get really addicted to this. They get addicted to how fun it is, the hot girls in class and all the calories they burn. And then it becomes something that they do 3, 4, 5 times a week. And there's not enough of the other stuff to keep them very balanced. And it becomes something that is the only way that they can get in shape is when I take spin, I'm in the best shape of my life, you know? And
well, to go along those, you know, along that pathway, I can relate on the sense that like I went through a period of just playing basketball as my get in shape. And that was my workout, you know, and just stepping outside the gym and getting really into the conditioning element of basketball and just the explosive movement. And I mean, there's a lot going on, but at the same time, like it was wear and tear on my joints. It was wear and tear on my ankles, my knees, like my lower back. And, you know, it as fun as it was, I had to understand that, like, I need to build my body up. I need to build up the strength and support my joints. And I need to work back in the gym. And but it's still fun. You know, it's a great experience. It's something that's like if spin provides that for you and it's an activity for you, keep it in your life. You know, like that's the thing. Like, we don't have to all like the same shit. Right. But at the same time, like, you got to benefit your body for the long haul and your joints, and think about if your posture is starting to decline, if you're having aches and pains constantly, you really got to be reflective on that and figure out like what that's really doing for you.
Yeah, and don't forget the spin is not what's hurting your knees. Okay, so it's not the spin class, especially if someone's telling you you have great form. Something that's just your body letting you know that there's something wrong.
Right.
So that's where you go back and you start looking into, you know, the hips and area. And typically it's, you know, and especially if it's going from a spin and you're in that seated position, my guess would be hips. You know, you're going to go either hips or the ankle is more than likely causing issues with the knee. In a spin, I would think it's less likely the ankles and more likely related to the hips. So I would go in that area.
Well, there's also when people are riding spin bikes or bikes in general. I used to train a high-level cyclist. He actually competed, and he would tell me how important the kick, like the pullback is in cycling. So it's not just the pushing down of the pedal, which is all a lot of anterior, a lot of quad. It's also the pullback and then the extension with the ankle. And it doesn't contribute the majority of the power in cycling, but it does enough to where it'll make a substantial difference.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely could be ankle. I mean, I would go there too, although it's less likely for spinning. It's less likely, it's more likely hips So I would look into that direction if that's what's going
now,
on.
Now, my experience with cyclists is the knee pain, and it, again, it depends where the knee hurts. But my experience training cyclists, a lot of the knee pain that people will complain about is where the patella tendon meets the tibia. So right at the tibial, what is that, tuberosity? And people will feel it like right down here where they'll get sore in their knees. And one thing that may help, and this is not a cure, it's just will alleviate some of your symptoms, is after you're done with your spin class, is to sit in a deep quad static stretch, which should take some pressure off that patella tendon because it'll loosen up the quads. Your quads are already super warm and pumped from your spin class. So you just get into a deep quad stretch and really hold them for a while and then come out and see if that helps. I've had some success with some of my cyclist clients with doing that, and where, you know, it was hard for them to change anything because they were in the middle of training for an event.
Our best 99. Are the MAPS programs applicable for someone who is morbidly obese or in very poor shape?
So I think we should first define what morbidly obese means, because that's another level.
Fraction of the community.
Yeah, that's another level, right? Obese, there's obese and there's morbidly obese, and it's defined in medical terms as someone who is between 40 to over 50 in terms of the BMI. So it's a pretty heavy
person. We're talking about mostly like 300, 400, 500 pound people.
It depends on your height, right?
Yeah, of course. But I mean,
you're pretty big, and it makes up 6.6% of the population, which is doesn't sound
that's
huge.
That's really high, though, if you think about
it. It's 15 million Americans.
Man,
it's 15 million Americans, and God, that
a
the
it's
number
a lot of rascal scooters.
The number of morbidly obese Americans over the last 10 years has jumped.
Although you mean those are the motored ones,
or the Lark.
I get around.
Remember that's that number has gone up something like 50 or 70%. Like the percentage of morbidly obese has grown tremendously over the last 10 years.
God, which is so crazy. Yeah.
Which is really crazy.
More information, more knowledge, more tools, and yet we're still going that direction.
We're
losing the fight, boys.
It's pretty scary. And you know, here's the thing: when you're talking about morbidly obese or very very poor shape, you're talking about very deconditioned individual. Somebody who, if I've had clients like this, right, they've come and see me and their workout consists of,
oh my God, Doug,
thanks Doug for that picture. Appreciate that.
Holy hottie.
For that, you know, those individuals will come in and their training will consist of standing up off the bench, sitting down on the bench.
Oh my God. What is that?
you know, it'll consist of lifting their arm above their head. You know, trying to get good posture. It'll consist of very basic movements.
What word did you just Google, Doug? I want people to be able to see this.
Morbidly obese.
Okay, yeah.
just quite a bit.
Just yeah. So,
but you know what?
So let's be honest. Oh wow, there's even where all the worst places are in America.
Oh, the South.
Click on that.
The South winds.
Texas is that high? Wow.
I think Mississippi was the fattest state. It's
there's
like the
there's
world
a percentage
champ.
Thing next
My
to
God.
It.
My God.
So let's address. We can all agree, like, if someone is morbidly obese, like, MAPS is not the program for them. Walking, moving, like, actually just moving the body is the program for them.
Yeah.
Somebody who's in poor shape, though, who's on their way maybe to become morbidly obese and actually can – they don't have to ride in a scooter to get somewhere. They actually can, because most people that are morbidly obese aren't even leaving their house, right?
No, they can barely get out of their chair.
Yeah,
I mean, like getting up and down from a seated position is very, very difficult.
Yeah, somebody at a morbidly obese is looking to do things like, you know, gastric bypass just so they could live and survive and knock off 100, 200 pounds just so they could eventually get up and move. So we'll address someone who's in really poor shape and maybe heading that direction. And yeah, absolutely, MAPS is. But we would regress that. Like, so, I mean, and MAPS Anywhere was, when we first were creating it, I remember we were talking about this, like, you know, hey, we're going to create this at-home program. So let's create something that, you know, people will be able to do this. One, they could do like the Sean T fucking super intense. And then they can also be for somebody who is really lacks conditioning mobility and can work out. And so that was why we kind of flipped that program on its head. And it's designed that it's only 2 days of body weight movements. And then the other 3 days are in intensity sessions, right? So where you have the ability to intensify it. So that way it allows somebody who's in great shape, they can use that to progress the program and really push through it. And then if there was someone who's nowhere near the ready for that, then they would stick to just working on the body weight type movements, which would be just
sitting. That are reinforcing postural positions.
Right.
And yeah, it's gonna have that sort of a carryover from it. So yeah, we wanted to make sure we at least had an answer out there for somebody that's super deconditioned. So it's not like we're just throwing them into hitting the weights when they haven't even addressed all these imbalances or even just lifting anything at all.
So correct me if you know, I mean, if you guys think otherwise. I mean, I think I would, if someone came to me and they're on their way to going this way and they said, hey, what MAPS should I do? I would stick them with MAPS Anywhere, MAPS Prime, and MAPS Red. And I would give them this. I would say, listen, MAPS Prime, we're gonna incorporate that with MAPS Anywhere. And then when you're ready to progress, we'll move you to MAPS Red pre-phase.
Yeah, I would even say just do the fortification workouts in Prime for a little while because they're all based on correction.
Right.
And just do that before even doing MAPS Anywhere, body weight movements. Because some body weight movements, although they can be very simple and basic, for some people who are really, really, really deconditioned, like the most basic movement.
Well, I think that's a perfect example there, right? How you would decide that would be based off of that, right?
Now, because you want to support the joints. I mean, because they're taking a lot of load, and stress. And so that's why it's important to understand where you can optimize that. Meanwhile, like simultaneously get out and just do some real light activity as far as movement is concerned. So walk.
I just looked up what it would take for me to be classified. And by the way, they call morbidly obese class 3. And you guys want to guess why they changed the name from morbidly obese to obese class 3? I don't know the answer, but I'm going to take a wild guess.
Class 3.
And say that they're trying not to offend people.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So that you could say, hey, you're in class 3 obese, instead of saying morbidly obese because people get offended. Yeah. Anyway, for me, who I'm 6 feet tall, I would have to weigh 300 pounds to be over 40 BMI. Now, that's definitely big, but that's not so big that I'm stuck in, like you said, a rascal or a lark. Yeah, yeah. So I think there's a lot more people in this category of who are just they're not so deconditioned that they can't move, but they're definitely pretty big.
Yeah.
The funny thing about BMI, which is a little side topic, I know athletes who are whose BMIs would put them in this morbidly obese. I'm pretty sure there's some NFL players.
Are you kidding me?
Who have a BMI over 40?
Dude,
who
that's
have
why I don't,
no problem moving.
You know, BMI is garbage when it comes to that. You could get somebody that's super muscular, and it's like, no, dude, come on, that doesn't work for that.
Yeah.
But they need to have some sort of standard. So I understand that as well.
Yeah, I'd say MAPS Prime fortification sessions, that's where I would start almost anybody who's deconditioned. I would have them do a compass test. If you're deconditioned, you're probably going to fail all three tests, and then it'll point you to fortification sessions that are connected to the three tests that you failed. Now, for those of you who don't have MAPS Prime and have no idea what I'm talking about, fortification sessions are correctional-based workouts. They're exercises put together and programmed to correct major muscle recruitment patterns and imbalances. And the focus of the workouts is not just different because of the exercises. It's also different because of the intent. For example, a seated cable row or even a machine row might be present in a routine for building maximum muscle or bodybuilding or even for strength. So it may be the same exercise, but the intent's totally different. Like if I'm having someone who I'm trying to put in correctional type workout and I'm having them do a machine row, a cable row, I'm having them use very lightweight, even for them, lightweight, not just lightweight relative, but even for them, something that's really light that they could do pretty easily. They could pull the weight back pretty easily. But the intent is perfect, perfect, perfect form. Like bringing the shoulder blades back and depressing them and pausing at the top of the rep where you're squeezing and coming forward with nice control, making sure the shoulders don't rise, making sure that the wrists don't curl, that I'm not getting this, that everything stays straight and tense, that I have good core stability. The intention with correctional exercise is as important, if not more important, than the exercises themselves. Because if I take that same exercise and put more weight on it, it's no longer correctional, because that person's recruitment patterns will revert back to the old one. So if you're listening, you don't have a MAPS program, and you're super deconditioned, that's the way you should approach your workouts. You should approach your workouts with perfecting your form and practicing your form, and maybe take videos of yourself doing them and seeing if you can identify discrepancies between right and left. And you can see that, you know, your shoulders may not be moving the way you want, or your hips may not be moving the way you want. If you're on our forum, you can post those videos on the forum and have people assess them, and then just perfect that. And then over time, slowly, you know, add resistance to what you're doing. So I guess that's it.
There you go.
Check it out. If you want to ask us a question that we can answer on our show, the best place to do it is on Instagram. Mind Pump Media is the page to do it. I have a personal page. It's Mind Pump Sal. Adam has one at Mind Pump Adam. Justin has Mind Pump Justin. And also at mindpumpmedia.com, we are still offering 30 days of coaching for free. All you got to do is opt in and you get it.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic, 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now, plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.